Good morning, everyone. You guys have been gone a couple weeks. If you have a Bible, we're going to be in Daniel chapter 6 this morning, Daniel 6. Thanks for being here in person to worship with us and those joining us online and, of course, the Kindred campus and our traditions venue. Daniel chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6 is one of the most loved stories in the entire Old Testament. I mean, we'll be introduced to an old godly man, hungry lions, corrupt jealous officials, and the bad guys getting what they deserve. In chapter 5 last week, we saw the end of the Babylonian Empire. You remember that's when Daniel was brought over in exile to Babylon. In a single day, the Medes and the Persians took over the city and killed the Babylonian king Belshazzar. So now we're in a kind of a new chapter, a new season for them. In chapter 6 that we're looking at today, Darius has been appointed by King Cyrus over Babylon. And Daniel is now an older man in his early 80s. And the young boy who had been carried off into exile in chapter 1 could never have dreamed how things would be when he got old. But as we'll see, Daniel is an extraordinary man. A fact that will raise the envy and the jealousy levels amongst his peers and leave Daniel in a very precarious position with some hungry lions. The trials Daniel faced were purposed by our sovereign God. Listen to this phrase now. The trials Daniel faced were purposed from a sovereign God who is never content with our comfort. He will do whatever it takes. And you could fill in the blank there. He will do whatever it takes. He'll invite us. He'll push us. He'll drag us to a position and place in life where he does his best work. Number one, if you're following along, be on guard, the first three verses. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to the rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the entire kingdom. So we begin by taking note of Daniel's position. He's one of three of these administrators, and we probably kind of speculate there's about 40 satraps that report directly to those administrators. Because of Daniel's gifts and his talents and his experiences in life, the king was saying, hey, you're coming up the ranks. You're going to be in charge of all of this. Now, some translations, instead of using the phrase excellent qualities, use the phrase his excellent in spirit. Daniel's ascent had less to do with his own abilities, but pointed directly to God's activity in his life. And by this time, the verdict on Daniel was in. He possessed an excellent spirit. He had the kind of wisdom that can only come from God. As you might imagine, the other two administrators were not jumping on this bandwagon to celebrate Daniel's promotion and this favor that he has. Instead, jealousy set in their hearts, and it caused havoc, as we'll see. Jealousy became the source for what was to follow. So Daniel's rise through the ranks of the governmental service in his later years would not go unopposed. They hated the fact that the king was about to promote a foreigner over a Persian, a man that was exiled over someone homegrown. So through no fault of his own, he soon had some pretty powerful enemies. Jealousy was rearing its ugly head. And yet, no matter how hard they looked, this blows me away. No matter how hard they looked, they found no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. What an amazing testimony. Some of you are aware that I've been gone the past two Sundays when I was planning to preach. And first of all, I just want to say thanks to our pastors for graciously stepping in those particular Sundays. It was discovered that I had some sort of infection. And immediately I attributed it to, I had a minor surgery done on my Achilles and their incision there. And that's sometimes where you get infection. I thought it's coming from there. But three different doctors looked at it and said, there's no infection there. So we don't know where this infection actually came from. For 9 days, my body went haywire. It's the only way I could describe it. And caused all kinds of problems. In a similar way, jealousy and envy are the symptoms of an infected heart. In Colossians chapter 3, if you're familiar with that, there's this title. It says, Living as Those Made Alive in Christ. And in Colossians 3, 1 and 2, it says this, Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on the things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your mind on the things above, not on earthly things. Because we have been raised with Christ, as one who was once dead because of sin, but now who is alive because of Christ's redeeming blood, we ought to set our hearts and our minds not on the things of this earth, but rather on his kingdom and he who sits at the right hand of the Father. When our heart and when our minds are not set on the things above, Colossians 3:1 says, we open the door for jealousy and envy to infect our hearts, leading us to think only about the things that are here and not the things that are there. Jealousy refers to the fear of losing something you already have, while envy is the desire for something someone else possesses that you want. And both jealousy and envy make the list of the seven deadly sins, if you're familiar with those. And for good reason, right? Jealousy and envy will greatly affect how you see and engage with people. Both will put our convictions to the test by inviting us to become more pragmatic and less convictional. In other words, we find ourselves doing and saying things that mirror the culture and stand in opposition to God. Verse 4, at this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Can you imagine? The other two satraps set out to find fault and to bring charges against Daniel. But as hard as they tried, they found nothing in Daniel's character they could use to accuse him. Nothing in his character? That alone is hard for me to get my mind around. I don't think any of us in this room could pass a test of character and come out on the other end having aced the test. Verse 5, finally these men said, we will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God. No question these other two men resented Daniel. You could see that because they found nothing wrong with Daniel in their search. They had no choice, but they had to ratchet it up a bit. They now resorted to changing the entire laws of the land, and in doing so, they stood in opposition to God's law. So this is their next attempt. His life was flawless. Every stone overturned, every closet emptied, every witness interviewed, and what did they find? Nothing. And so it was determined that if they were to have any chance in seeing one of their own get the top spot, they would need to pit Daniel's allegiance to God against his faithfulness to the king. The two jealous administrators set it all up. It became a 1v1, Daniel and his God against the king and his gods. How in the world would Daniel fare under such pressure? So far, he had been thrown in the fire and came out unsinged. Daniel knew all about the allegiance to God being tested by the tactics of man. But after finding no corruption, they moved to plan B, which involved more than their attempt of character assassination. It now involved Daniel's religious practices. And that shows just how desperate they were in the desire to bring accusation against Daniel. They went for the jugular. They would go as far as to change the very laws of the land to build their case. They were willing to go the entire distance. Any law that stands, this is for us now, any law that stands in direct opposition to God always has a motive. And their motive was to have Daniel removed and in doing so open the position so they could fill it. As believers, we find ourselves in a predicament. For us, it involves the evil one's influence and sinful man against the one and only true God, high God. What is sinful man's motive? What would be the motive of sinful man? To make what is right wrong, and to make what is wrong right. Our culture has shown their hand, revealing just how far it will go, all without any fear of God. And there is a day coming when, as believers, we will be pitted against the acts of sinful man. But just remember, just like in the fire Daniel's friends were thrown into, there was a fourth in there with them, the pre-incarnate Christ. But we've been given the Holy Spirit to keep in front of us the hope of eternity and the faith for today. Verse 6, so these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever." The royal administrators, the prefects, the satraps, the advisors, and governors all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered. In accordance with the law of Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. They were certain that they could get him. If they put his devotion to God at odds with his devotion to the king and the laws of the land, they would force him to have to choose which he would do. I think in both of these cases, it's interesting because administrators, and we'll see a little bit, the king, both were aware of the deep commitment that Daniel had to his God. To disobey God would ruin his testimony and integrity. To disobey the laws of the land would get him prosecuted as one who would not be fully loyal to the king. Daniel himself was strangely left out of this decision. Remember, there were three administrators. Only two came. And the king bought it. He made this quick, foolish decision without any consultation of Daniel that he would live to forget very soon. So this foolproof plan was hatched, they thought. The day would end with someone doing lunch with the lions, but the who we have yet to see. I thought of this at the end of the first point, this idea of be on guard. Sinful man runs an underground fight club where he wants to get you in the ring to see just how well you'll do. Stand firm. Don't take the bait. Secondly, stand firm in the faith, verses 10 through 17. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. And what do you think he would do? Three times a day, he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Daniel didn't respond out of desperation. On his knees, he prayed, giving thanks to God, as he was in the habit of doing. A consistent walk with the Lord, friends, a consistent walk with the Lord turns what seems like a mountain of urgency into a pebble that it is. My band teacher in high school used to say, practice doesn't make it perfect. Perfect practice makes it perfect. I discovered that actually I never really listened to that. But the moments that we find ourselves in such a predicament, having to choose God over an opponent, will certainly be revealing of our preparation. This is what we've trained for. Stand firm on your beliefs. Know your convictions. Seek God. Upon hearing of the new decree, Daniel immediately goes home and he purposefully disobeys it. Not because he's a rebel, far from it, but God came first in his life and there was nothing that was going to get in the way of his relationship with the Lord. Just think about that. Nothing. Talk about resolve and holding to your convictions. Daniel was ready to play King of the Hill, knowing his God was so much greater than the corruption of man. Note also that he doesn't go home to moan to God about his predicament. No, he kneels, and it says he gives thanks to God. As a Christian, it is impossible to read this far into the story of Daniel and the lion's den without thinking about Jesus. He too had an excellent spirit, for he came as wisdom of God. And when he was conspired against like Daniel, his integrity held fast. The entire Sanhedrin conspired against him. The chief priests rose up in alliance with the worldly powers to undo him. Yet his response, what did he do? Yet his response was to go in the garden and pray. Like Daniel, this was his life pattern. Verse 11, then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about the royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except for you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den? And the king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. Then they said to the king, well, Daniel, who's one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. And when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and make every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his signet ring and with the rings of his nobles so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. He asked God for help. We need to remember that Daniel was in his early 80s at this stage. And as such, he was a man with a lifetime of experiencing the faithfulness of his Lord. Because of this, Daniel wasn't freaked out. He asked God for help. I don't know about you, but for me, one of my recurring prayers is to ask God for help. And probably a word that I use most often when I'm seeking God and needing his help is the word wisdom. It doesn't matter if I'm going into a meeting, doesn't matter if I'm going to the hospital, doesn't matter anything. Often I will pray and ask God, please God, give me wisdom. What are you asking God for in those reoccurring prayers? Your dependency on God, this faithful pattern in your walk with Christ, is what sustains you. The faithfulness of God calms the waters. It reminds me of some lyrics from a song called The Goodness of God. It says, I love you, Lord, for your mercy never fails me. All of my days, I've been held in your hands. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. Because all my life you have been faithful, and all my life you have been so, so good. With every breath that I am able, oh, I sing of the goodness of God. D.L. Moody, you probably recognize that name, said that character is what you do in the dark. We'll see from this verse where Daniel's strength lay and who he was when no one else was looking. He is unshakable because of his firm foundation beneath him that held him up, and that is the Lord. But there he was, praying to God in direct disobedience to the king's decree. The plan had been hatched, the trap had been set, the bait was laid, and it had now sprung on God's servant Daniel. And although the king now realized that he had now been tricked, there was nothing that he could do about it. A decree was a decree, and it must be acted upon. So even though the king is sorrowful when he realizes that the law that he had agreed to is now being used to condemn Daniel, the law of the Medes and the Persians must be upheld, and thus Daniel was thrown into the lion's den. The last words Daniel heard before becoming the lion's dinner, so to speak, the king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." Stand firm in the faith, even when opposition invites you into the ring. Thirdly, be courageous, verses 18 through 24. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating, without any entertainment being brought to him. And he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" And Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." David Helm says in his book, Daniel for You, this is what he writes. He says, "Daniel, like other biblical characters, experienced the cost of being faithful to God in a pagan land. Both had the high resolve and the courage to remain true, and both did so even when the steps of God set under their feet meant traveling the way of humiliation and suffering." The king was obviously really concerned for Daniel, to say the least. As someone has once said, the king fasted for the night, hoping the lions would do the same. While everyone else was glad that Daniel would finally be catnip, the king was troubled. There's a very real sense in which there's a picture for us here. The New Testament tells us that your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking to devour you. Sounds familiar. Resist him, standing firm in the faith. The lions' mouths were shut. 2 Timothy 4:17 says this, "But the Lord stood at my side and gave me strength, so that through me the message might be fully proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it. And I was delivered from the lion's mouth." Daniel is modeling for us the need to remain strong in our faith amid our difficulties. And so the king hurried to see if Daniel had survived the night. Interestingly, the narrative omits the vantage point of Daniel entirely. We read nothing that speaks of his experience during the night. Keep in mind, though, through it all, Daniel is not the only one on trial. God is also on trial. Verse 23, "The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God." Verse 24, "At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all of their bones." You may not have heard that many times, because I think something usually missing from the Sunday school version of the story is the judgment that was carried out upon the men and their families who had falsely accused Daniel. They got to spend a little bit of time with the lions themselves. But let's not miss the fact that there were no angels to guard and protect those that did not fear the Lord. They had been snared in their own trap. Of course, the greatest example of this came one day when Jesus was nailed to a cross. How Satan must have rejoiced as he turned the masses against Jesus. He would have been beside himself as darkness covered the land and the Son of God died a slow and agonizing death upon the cross. "I've done it," he would proclaim. "I have killed the Son of God. My plan has worked. I have stopped God." And yet, as Jesus breathed his last, the curtain in the temple was torn from top to bottom. The way into the Holy of Holies was open to all, and Satan's plan had backfired. That cross, the same cross that was meant to seal the Son of God's fate, at least from his perspective, would be the very thing that God would use to seal Satan's fate and set captives free. Fourth, be strong, 25 through 28. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So Daniel was required to go through all these trials that we've been reading about. But what a result. Not only had Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon issued an earlier personal testimony to everyone needs to praise Daniel's God. You remember that in chapter 4. But now King Darius has also issued this decree to all the people that the God of Daniel must be feared and revered. Incredible. When we are down and are wondering what is happening, I think we can remember some of the words of Darius, for he reminds us, as does this whole chapter, that God is a living God. God endures forever. God rescues and saves. God performs wonders on our behalf. And I want you to think about this next statement. God does his best work in our trials. Keep in mind that brokenness is not the shattering of life. It's the revealing of Christ. Let me leave you with this one thing. In what ways is God inviting you to be even more bold in your faith? 1 Corinthians 16:13 says this, "Be on your guard. Stand firm in the faith. Be courageous, be strong, do everything in love."